Now, get ready to spend the next 2 hours with our three sports-loving ladies. Mia O'Brien, Lauren Brooks, and Taylor Dahl.
This is Helmets and Heels
on 1010XL, switched on by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor. Show me what you got,
lady. Welcome into a Wednesday edition of Helmets and Heels. I'm super excited to talk about the stadium, and we'll get to that a little later in the show, although there does seem to be some conflicting reports. Nate Monroe tweeted out that it's done, and then Gene Fournette tweeted out that both sides have told him that's not exactly the case. So.
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah.
So is this the great source war or something like that? I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, Mia, because that's exactly how I wanted to at least start for the first 30 seconds or so, is please address the tension as far as Twitter is concerned.
Right, and let's first and foremost begin with, I have a tremendous amount of respect for Demetrius Harvey. He knows that. And if he doesn't, I hope he's listening to this, because I do. In thinking about how we would discuss this topic, and we're going to discuss this incident that some of you who aren't even on Twitter probably don't even know exactly what's happening. And that's okay. We're going to get through this in 30 seconds and we're going to move on. I promise, even though I'm long-winded. I was talking with Taylor, workshopping exactly, you know, how we would discuss this. And I want to begin by saying, two things can be true at the same time, because the truth ultimately is in the eyes of the beholder. Take, for example, we have only had, get a round of applause ready, by the way, RJ. We have only had, to my knowledge, somewhere between 6 and 8 angry emails about Helmets and Heels being your new daily program from 12 to 2.
Wow, that's it?
In 30 plus days on the air, we've only had somewhere between 6 and 8 of those angry emails.
I would like to read all of them, by the way. Right. I have not seen those. I'd love to read them.
So in Taylor's eyes, or my eyes maybe, you know, we may say, wow, only 6 or 8? That's awesome. Somebody else may say, oh no, really? But those emails, they were really, really like, they hit hard and they hit home. Both things can be true. And so that is where I say, one source could say one thing, another source could say another thing. Both could very much be true. And I want to kind of just leave it at that.
Okay.
I would also like to echo the sentiments of Evan Ingram, although I don't think he's listening, but if he is, shout out to Evan. I expressed to Demetrius that this was a point that I had made on XL Primetime on a show in February as part of my reporting. And unfortunately, just because of the social media age, it kind of got a life of its own over the last few days, and it became a talking point on our airwaves and online. I'm ready to move on. I know he's ready to move on. Let's all move on. On to the next thing, on to 2024.
We're all in alignment then.
Well said, because you know, it's funny, Lauren. We have the lovely Kalila sitting in with us shadowing from UNF today. And if not for that, I was planning on going over to RJ for our live stream title. And I wanted him to title it, We Are All in Alignment. But I was like, ah, no. I'm working on some other stuff. We got a lot of other stuff going on at Superstation. And also, we're on to 2024.
That would have been perfect for Big Chief Tire Monday.
Oh, you're right.
All in alignment.
Again, yes.
This upcoming Monday. We'll
this is what I was just teaching her, too, about, like, we're trying to, you know, you're pairing sponsorships, mm-hmm. multimedia opportunity. Yeah, missed opportunity there, alas.
No, I think it's all good. And I would assume that, I would assume that Evan Ingram was responding to Demetrius thinking he's talking about the offense. And Demetrius in no way, shape, or form was talking about the offense, because you were talking about the defense. And so I think this is at least how I interpreted mm-hmm. Evan Ingram's tweet, is he's trying to defend the offense
yeah.
and how they were operating. And in no way, yes, probably their practices weren't full speed mm-hmm. because the quarterback also wasn't there sometimes yeah. in the fall. And so there were times I'm sure that they weren't full speed, but really, like we said, it was addressing the defense. We got that out of the way. Let's move to the offensive line. I've got my prediction for what I think the offensive line will look like in 2024, which is fairly, I think, cut and dry, and then also 2025. So I can't wait to hear what y'all think. So I'll start with 2024, and I would assume we're all in alignment. I'm going to use that word yep. so many times today.
Go for it. Hey, again, Taylor and I talked about this as well this morning when we were like, all right, how do we want to talk about this? We did say, our wonderful program consultant, Jason Barrett, once said, once everybody's on the same page, lean into the bit full hard. And yeah. so, you know what? We are living the gimmick, folks. We're gonna lean right in.
That's right. All right. So Cam Robinson, left tackle. Ezra Cleveland, left guard. Center will be Mitch Morse. Brandon Sheriff, your right guard. And Anton Harrison, your right tackle. Does anyone disagree with that as of May 8th?
Right now, no. I do not.
As of May 8th, no.
Yeah. Now, certainly things can change.
Yes.
Cam Robinson could be shipped off. There could be certainly injuries upcoming. We certainly hope that's not the case. Right. Mm-hmm. Or you could have camp battles and you could see players pushing those guys and they could potentially win maybe a right guard job with, you know, as far as competition there. But I think, or and maybe Anton Harrison could move to left. So that's going to transition me to 2025. Anton Harrison, left tackle, 2025. That's what I have. What about you, Mia?
I have Walker Little on the tag at left tackle in 2025.
And so I'm going to guess then Anton Harrison is still your right tackle.
I still have him at right tackle. And don't forget, I think people do forget that Cam Robinson played on the tag not too long ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Could I see a world in which Walker Little plays on the tag? Yes. And they try to make him prove it again, whether that is because Cam Robinson is traded away this season and Walker gets a full season in his final year of his rookie contract, or if, as has been the case the last few years, they split the role of left tackle because of whether it's injury or suspension, and the Jags feel like they've seen enough. Cam Robinson would be entering year 30 of his life, year eight.
Oh, I was like, wow, we've had him a while.
I meant to say age 30, and it came out
For some people, it feels like year 30.
Right, yeah, year 30, year 60.
Back when the team was good in 2017.
Right, exactly.
Pre-Jags.
Right, exactly. So he would be entering his you know, he'll be turning 30 the next year.
Right.
He's in the final year of his contract, and the Jags say, even if we've only gotten 5 games of Walker this year, we're going to tag him, we're going to bank on either A, getting a short-term 2 to 3 year deal done with him that offseason, which would then open up Walker to hit free agency again when he's 27. And so then it's friendly for both sides. And also you say we're getting a left tackle in his prime who has shown us enough in a limited capacity over the past few years.
Yeah, I was going to say Walker Little also. I think that I from what we saw beginning of the season last year with Walker, I think there were definitely moments in there that you felt he could hold that position and he could be there. I think that he gets a little highly criticized because of the stepping on the ankle of Trevor, which wasn't technically Walker's fault. So I think he gets a little hate because of that. But I think that we'll continue to see Walker Little even get better personally, because I think we have so far through the time that we've seen them. And I just personally don't see Cam still here, whether that's even honestly this season. I'm not totally sure, but definitely not next season in my eyes. And then you talk about behind that, they will have to address obviously what goes in-depth pieces behind Walker Little and what. But in my opinion, I think we'd be seeing Walker there.
Well, the beautiful thing is you just drafted Javon Foster.
And I was about to say, so if they can develop him, perfect.
I think he's a swing tackle. Like, yeah, me too. I do want to be clear. And like, look, if he's thrust into starting duty, I think he could handle it. Maybe not this year, but down the line. But I think he was drafted with the idea of he will be a swing tackle.
Yeah.
I think that when Anton Harrison was picked, the plan was to play him at right tackle for one season and then shift him to left tackle for this upcoming season. But because of how many injuries they had last year, I think they said, no, we have to keep as many tackles as possible. And we like how Cam Robinson plays when he's in there, which, of course, at times he's not available because of injury last year, the suspension.
And injury,
right? So I do think Cam Robinson, the plan was to move on from Cam. And maybe it still is, like you said.
Yeah.
But for the here and now, I think Anton Harrison, they believe, is a truer left tackle. And I think by the time we start this conversation next year, he's solidified as left tackle. But right, then that means the question mark for Walker Little.
And I would agree with that real quick, Taylor. I would agree with that if their offensive tackle of choice had fallen to them in either the first, second, or third round this year. But because it didn't, that's where I think now that opens up some opportunities for some shuffle.
Yeah, because for me, I think that if you have Anton Harrison and he continues to play at the level he did last season and you know he's playing that at right tackle, to risk making the move to left tackle, also shuffling the line once again when you have maybe your solid right tackle that you already like and you have guys capable of playing left tackle, I just don't know if they'd want to mix things around again when they're talking about having some sort of consistency on the line.
Yeah, and we certainly will see what happens with Cam Robinson between now and the end of the season. Is he still here? Does he play all 17 games? If that's the case, and maybe
shifts completely then.
Sure. If they have a great offensive line this season with Cam Robinson anchoring at left tackle, then my thought process about Anton is different, and I think then he stays right at right tackle.
Let me ask you this.
But Cam's expensive.
For you, for both of you, we'll go Lauren, then Taylor. For you, what would it take to move Cam Robinson, let's say, the week before the season, late August, when you've seen enough from Walker that you feel confident he would be your left tackle. You've seen enough from Javon Foster that you know in a pinch as your swing tackle. Not to mention, don't forget, you still have Blake Hance, who can play all five positions mm-hmm. along the line. You feel confident enough that you could deal Cam. What does the compensation need to be?
I think it's a great question, because I think to this point, what they've kind of told us without telling us is it's going to have to be a pretty high pick.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, they would have been like, all right, let's go with Walker Little at left tackle, and we're going to save a lot of money without Cam. But I think they believe so much in Cam to this point that it would have to be second or third rounder, which seems kind of crazy to think because he's expensive.
Yeah, and that's what I was about to say, because that team would also have to figure out that $20-plus million contract and what they're going to do. But we've seen teams need that. Like, if they're looking at a left tackle, if their starting left tackle goes down and they're in panic mode, they may honestly be willing to do something like that. The only maybe hesitation is the fact that he struggled with injuries, especially this last season, and then also the suspension. So you didn't get to see really full Cam last year, and maybe that would back people up from wanting to jump on something that high.
What would you think?
You didn't get to see the entire starting offensive line that they wanted, Taylor, which included a guard who didn't get here until week 10.
Yeah. That's why this conversation's so fun, by the way.
Right, exactly. And if you're just joining us, again, we are projecting the Jaguars' 2024 offensive line versus their 2025 offensive line. I personally think, as I look around the National Football League, and it's funny as we talk about drama in Jags Twitter, have you perused Chiefs Twitter at all the last few weeks? The defending Super Bowl champions, as of this writing, don't have a left tackle. Yes, they drafted somebody in the second round who, by the way, is considered a project and is still learning the left tackle position.
They've got Juwan, though.
They have. They paid him
to be a left tackle.
Then they need a right tackle, Lauren. They have Wanya Morris, who was opposite Anton Harrison at Oklahoma, but they really weren't that impressed with him, by all accounts, in spot duty last year. And so if the Kansas City Chiefs don't have a left tackle, you couple that with Ryan Ramczyk potentially being forced to medically retire in New Orleans, and I understand they drafted Tyleese Fuaga, but sorry, that only solves one of your tackle positions that could potentially leave the other one open. The Washington Commanders drafted a player in Brandon Coleman of TCU who projects at guard, but they are saying he's their left tackle, and they literally don't have anybody else besides him. I just can't help but shake the feeling that there will be a team come August that evaluates where their roster is and says, yeah, even for a 1 year, we need Cam. And the reason I don't think that the Jaguars would fetch a second or a third for Cam is because of the contract. And yes, he's in the final.
Desperate times call for desperate
measures. Right, which is where I think if someone calls you for a three for Cam, take him. Like, I think it's done. I think it's a done deal if it's a third. I think right now, though, the Jaguars are anticipating that compensation. Again, this is based off solely previous trades that have occurred, since we got to cite our sources on this program. This is based off solely tackles that have been traded in the past and what value they've fetched. And knowing that there were conversations in the building draft week of teams that had interest in Cam, by the way, I can confirm that.
Yeah, that does not surprise me.
Yeah, that's where it's honestly shocking to me that it took until draft week to even have that conversation. But that speaks to what you said, Lauren, that they love Cam. They don't want to lose Cam. He is one of the leaders in that room. And I respect that. But I do think that if it's a fourth, late August, and you feel confident enough in Walker Little, which is a question mark, then I think they would pull the trigger.
And I think what scares you is, okay, let's say you do trade Cam and you get what you want for him. So now Walker Little is your starting left tackle, unless they decide to flip it and they say Anton is our starting left tackle and Walker Little is our starting right tackle.
And we make him learn another position.
Right. But, I mean, Walker's been all over the line, so he'll figure it out, right? So let's say, because what happens in the NFL week to week are offensive line injuries. We all know that. There's always shuffling at that position group. Let's say one of those two tackles gets hurt, and now you only have Javon Foster as your swing tackle, who now enters the ring as a rookie. And again, I'm sure they like him, and he started a ton of games at Missouri, played great. Heard Eli Drinkwitz talking about how great he was at his school. But then what?
Yeah. Like, Blake Hance.
Right.
Or Ezra Cleveland.
Ezra's your left guard, and you don't want to move Ezra from the left guard position.
Well,
to
here's the good
position.
News.
So that's why I think four tackles is a good thing to have on the roster.
But can you manage that? The numbers don't add up. You're only going to, I mean, last year this team had 8 offensive linemen active on game day. They kept 9 on the 53-man roster. The numbers just aren't going to match up unless you're telling me you're saying goodbye to Fortner. unless you don't want to have him as a backup center, backup guard, and he's off the team.
And I doubt that's how they feel because they've protected him so much, and we'll get to the center position in a second. They protected him so much, but at the same time, you have Tyler Shatley, which, by the way, I have to right a wrong. On Sunday at church, I saw Tyler, did not realize it was his birthday. The Jaguars didn't tweet it out until after church, and so I did not say happy birthday, so happy birthday to Tyler. And I say that because Tyler told me happy birthday on my birthday, so best. I have to tell him that
front
now.
Front of the program.
But, yeah, so... I think they look at it and say, that's why we re-signed Tyler Shatley to back up Mitch Morse. And maybe they do feel like Fortner's not going to help them this season. That would surprise me, though, because, again, at every turn, other than signing Mitch Morse in free agency, other than that massive move, which said actually what we've been saying all along isn't technically true, they have defended him. All right, let's get it to left guard in 2025. We've talked all about left tackle. I say Anton Harrison. Y'all say Walker Little. Left guard in 2025. Who you got?
Ezra Cleveland.
That's who I have as well. He was signed to a three-year deal.
Can I get
here.
To who his backup may be, though?
Yes, go for it. And by the way, you think, also think Ezra Cleveland. Ezra. Yeah, me too.
So again, Blake Hance signed a two-year deal this offseason. They're actually, if you can believe this, there's a larger dead cap number for Blake Hance if you were to cut him than there is for Tyler Shatley. So file that one away when we get to the center position. Mm-hmm. Steven Jones. Signed as the only undrafted rookie free agent offensive lineman. I believe they're going to put him in the incubator, the walking refrigerator, the dancing refrigerator from Oregon. Go back, watch the tape, see how he was mauling guys right next to JPJ. And I believe they'll put him on the practice squad this year. He was the only offensive lineman they signed, an undrafted rookie free agency. And they'll hopefully develop him, and he would be the backup to Ezra Cleveland.
I like it because I'm not sure who else it's going to be because Ben Bartsch is no longer here. And
you guys don't like Shatley?
I just don't. It's a one-year deal right now for Shatley. And that's
so he's gone.
Yeah. I mean, there were rumors about the retirement this past offseason. Yeah. And so that's why I wouldn't project long term.
That he would be next. Yeah.
And I think if he was good enough to be the starting left guard, then they wouldn't have had to bring
Ezra. Well, I'm saying
Ezra
behind
Cleveland.
Ezra. Is what I'm talking about.
Oh, I gotcha. Yeah. I guess I always think of him as a backup center first.
Yeah.
More than guard.
And by the way, too, the other part of it as well,
especially if Fortner's gone.
Right. Well, no, Fortner would be in the final year of his deal also, his rookie deal in 2025. And so that's where I would think they would lean towards, and I know this will upset many of you, they will lean towards keeping Luke Fortner than they would retaining Tyler Shatley's services. They let him walk in free agency, and after a month and a half on the street is when they brought him back. Mm-hmm. There have been conversations, you know, with Luke Fortner. He understands why Mitch Morse is here. He knows what he has to do over these next, you know, this next year at the very least to fortify his position, pun intended, on this roster moving forward.
Yeah, to get stronger.
Strong, yeah.
All right, so center I have for next season in 2025, Mitch Morse.
Yes, because he will be in the second year of his deal.
Signed a two-year deal. I assume he'll play well this season. Yep. I assume the offensive line is going to be in the top 15, at least I'll say, this upcoming season. Because I do believe that Doug Peterson has a good handle on why it went off the rails last season, and that Mitch Morse is going to make the guards next to him better, like Tony Baselli said on the drill.
Yeah, I agree. I think Mitch Morse, and I think I do believe that they will have to address it next season, though, whether that's in free agency or in the draft, another center, because he is getting later into his career, so you have to start looking forward a little bit. So I would see them picking up some type of center, because I don't think we have it on the roster right now.
Oh, and it would be someone who probably has guard versatility as well, by the way. And so then... maybe not Steven Jones, but that's okay. But then, because then you have somebody who can back up both those positions. I do want to remind folks, because Taylor brought up the great revisionist history point of Walker Little played great in the first four games, graded out according to PFF as the best offensive lineman. Then Cam comes back. He moves into left guard. He gets hurt in the second quarter of the Bills game, was banged up throughout the course of the season, got yanked all over the offensive line. And then, of course, the infamous push back into Trevor that now people believe he stinks because of that. Do we forget that this offensive line, big picture here, another revisionist point that I believe people have made, this offensive line only gave up 41 sacks in 2023, which was, I believe, 10th best, 11th best. I'm too many.
Middle of the pack for
too many numbers here. Middle of the pack was only 7 more than the best offensive line, which was the San Francisco 49ers, who gave up 34.
And that's without the line playing together, this what's supposed to be the starting line. And I think a lot of it, too, with Walker Little, is the fact that they've had him play all over the line. Lauren just made that joke. He can move to right. Like, he's been everywhere else. He can do it. At some point, you have to let him play a position and fully learn and develop in that position, but they haven't been able to do that because so many injuries have happened on the offensive line. So you're seeing glimpses from Walker, and you haven't been able to see this full season project, but that's because he's moving every other week to another position.
Correct.
All right, so right guard. I think you and I will be in alignment, Mia. Cooper Hodges.
Yes, ma'am. Let's bring it
Cooper
on down.
I think Twitter voted that too.
Baker County stand up. Now, it's important to note. Cooper Hodges is coming off of a season in which he missed the entire year with an injury. Mm-hmm. Even if maybe, you know, and I don't know. I don't want to be the doctor here. I don't want to speculate exactly what the injury was. He told me, but I'm blanking on exactly what it is. But the point is that you banked on Ben Bartsch coming back from a significant knee injury. Mm-hmm. You banked on him coming back after a little to no training camp and being your starting left guard. And he wasn't healthy.
Yeah.
And then when things didn't go the way you were hoping they went, it was, well, we got to put Shatley in there over Bartsch. And that's where I think they are cautiously optimistic with Cooper Hodges. I can tell you this. The words heir apparent to Brandon Scherff have been thrown out to me. Lauren, I'm sure you've heard the same thing. And so that's why it's absolutely on the table, and it's the hope and the dream. I'm just very curious to see, you know, how he plays during an actual regular season game if he's thrust into action, because we never got to see that in his rookie year.
I would love to see a camp battle begin this year between Scherff and Cooper Hodges to push that right guard position for this season. And then that way, Cooper, whether I'm assuming he doesn't win that battle that Scherff does, but that he wins it for next season moving forward. Is that who you think, Taylor?
For this year or next year?
For next season, right guard.
Next season, I'm going to say the right guard is not on the roster right now.
Okay, so the Jaguars draft a guard at some point in time this upcoming, or
free agent.
You could sign,
or draft,
by the way.
It just always seems everyone likes to draft offensive linemen.
Before we get to right tackle, I love the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures. I love your interaction. Within seconds of me bringing up that stat about 41 allowed sacks in 2023, we had multiple people texting in. Well, it was all Trevor. It was all thanks to Trevor. Yes, Trevor is part of that, but I don't think you can deny that they looked better in pass protection in 2023, if only to the naked eye, than they did in 2024. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I mean, pass protection, yes.
They couldn't run the ball. I'm right
there
with you.
I would bring up the fact that Trevor had the 12 fumbles, and part of that is pass protection, too. Like, the lack, at times, yes, pass protection was really good, and then at other times when it did break down, and he scrambles, and then that's when he pressed and a lot of times lost the football. All right, right
some
tackle.
Some of that was on just Trevor, too, though.
But, right, exactly. Yeah. I was just going to say some of those fumbles are also on Trevor, which is why I'm like, the fact that, like, you know, the Trevor police come, like, flying in, and they're like, that was all thanks to Trevor. Look,
it's a combination of things, but we talk about how it starts in the trenches, and it does, but some of that it does come on the quarterback, but at the same time, when you're looking at, there are differences in moments during the season when they were successful at one thing and not successful at the other, and we noticed drastically, obviously, the run blocking was the issue.
Right, correct. And perhaps that also is the structure of how the offense was designed last year.
Yeah.
I think you can also put some of that into that because teams were crowding the box. They were only keeping one. I mean, the 49ers are the prime example. Mm-hmm. I mean, they brought safety help, corner help. They just absolutely crowded the line of scrimmage. And then you can't run the ball because they said, well, you guys are operating your offense in a box, so we're going to play within the box because that's what you're giving us. So I think that's important. But, yes, it's just fascinating to me how, you know, when we defend Trevor, we're told we defend Trevor too much. But when we defend the offensive line, it should be thanked for Trevor. Look, I saw Nate Tice's cut-ups back in 2021. Now, of course, with Yahoo Sports, shout out to Nate, previously with The Athletic. When he was showing during that Urban Meyer debacle season, look at Trevor avoiding the sack. Look at how elusive he is in the pocket and how smooth it is. I agree with you. I'm not bashing Trevor. I'm just saying it also can be credited to the offensive line comparatively 2023 versus 2024.
And finally, I have Javon Foster, the 6'5", 313-pounder at right tackle. He did start all 3 years at Missouri. And so I think they are going to have to start to go young at certain positions because that Trevor Lawrence deal is going to catch up to them at some point.
If they were to opt for that situation where Walker Little walks, Cam Robinson walks, or is traded, whatever happens, I believe they would draft a right tackle in the first round of next year's draft. However, in my scenario, it would still be Anton Harrison. But if your scenario was to play out, Lauren, I think where it gets dicey, and again, I haven't done any work on the 2025 draft, but from the early returns,
other than Carson Beck versus Shedeur Sanders.
We're very familiar with the quarterbacks, but outside of that.
There's a new rap song out, by the way, if anybody wants to.
Yeah, we're going to get to that at some point in today's program. We're going to get to that. But yeah, no, the early look-see that I've had, it is not a tackle-laden first round. There are three names that are being floated, and someone could emerge.
Yeah.
But I don't see another first round like this one where we had six, seven, eight offensive linemen go off the board and have first round grades by teams across the league.
And we've talked a lot about how I read the article about it. And then yesterday in our conversation, they talked about how heavy it's defense this year. So that is like a little bit of a concern. But obviously in my scenario, Anton's still there. So.
Yep. Well, that was a lot of fun, ladies. Yeah. And a year from now, we'll see go back
how
and
wrong
see
we are.
not necessarily how wrong, but how well we did. I'll go the other way. All right. We've got some quarterback predictions. Who wins certain jobs around the NFL? That is next on Helmets and Heels on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
This is Helmets and Heels.
Kept classy by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor.
On 1010 XL.
Taylor Dalmio, Brian RJ Saunders, I am Lauren Brooks. Let's talk a little bit about quarterbacks, ladies. Taylor, I thought this was a great suggestion for a topic because there are so many jobs in the NFL that seem to be maybe not an actual competition in the eyes of the head coach. For instance, like the Steelers, we think it's Russell Wilson, not Justin Fields. And that's where I want to start. But I think in the eyes of fans, that's an absolute true quarterback battle.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's interesting because most of the time when they make a move like getting a Russ and then other things come after, it's pretty much seems like it's the set, okay, this guy's our starting quarterback. But we've obviously seen in the past things change once you get to camp. When we're looking at some of these, and there's a long list that we'll all go through of obviously new quarterbacks when it comes to rookie quarterbacks or just ones coming from other teams. There's a lot of quarterback movement this offseason. But for me, there's so many factors that go into this because obviously we get to camp and we see who has the best connections, who's picking up this offense the best. And then you have the scenarios where you're like, okay, I could see this person starting, but only for a few weeks until, you know, so-and-so takes over this offense. And we've had those situations a lot the last few years too. So that, like, when we were going through this list, I was just kind of looking. I was like, man, there's a lot of teams right now that have questions at who will be starting week one and then who's going to be week eight.
Yeah, it reminds me, honestly, of Indianapolis last year because there were people that thought Gardner Minshew will start the first X amount of games the season.
And there were those of us here in Jacksonville who were like, well, if Anthony can't stay healthy, then we know who's going to pop in.
Yeah. Right, but a lot of people thought even if they were both healthy at the start of the season, that Gardner would win the job because he has all the experience. And people who watched Anthony Richardson every play in college thought, well, he has not exactly been able to master the collegiate offense, is at least what people thought.
Yeah.
Now looking back, I think, talk about revisionist history, I think now some people are like, well, it might have been the offense, not so much the quarterback that factored into it. But either way, this was the conversation we were having in Indianapolis. So let's start in Pittsburgh. Taylor, you're obviously super familiar with Justin Fields, and everybody knows Russell Wilson's game. Yeah. Who do you think starts the season? Who do you think ends the season? And we're not, by the way, going to talk about injuries in this conversation.
Yeah.
Just truly who plays better.
Because those we can't
better.
Predict, obviously.
Yeah, and as we've seen the last few years, lots of quarterbacks will be injured despite the fact that the NFL is changing the rules to try and protect them.
Yeah.
That still is going to happen. But yeah,
injuries. There's multiple
aside,
on this list that were injured the last couple years.
Correct. So. And that's why some of them changed teams probably as well.
So the Steelers, for me, I do think Russell Wilson will be starting. I think that just because, obviously, more time in the league, I think that he'll be able to pick up certain aspects a little quicker than Justin, just because Justin, again, has had multiple offensive coordinators, multiple offenses, and I know Russ has recently, too, but Justin never hasn't had any solid, like, here's our offense for more than a year, and so he's going to be learning another one now, but I would not be surprised if by midseason Justin's in.
Okay.
I'm right there with Taylor. Whether it's injuries, whether it's the fans clamoring, although I don't think Mike Tomlin takes too much stock in what the fan base up in Pittsburgh
thinks. Well, they
switched
three times last year because they couldn't figure it out. So he's come to the point where he's looking for that quarterback of the future. And if Russ isn't in, and they're chanting Justin.
They relied on Mason Rudolph at times last year.
And thought about re-signing him, too. They also switched their offensive coordinator midway through the season. Mm-hmm. And it was some combination of offensive coaches that were calling the games for the Steelers on offense.
And they still made the postseason.
And they went ahead and they signed. They went and hired the man who had poor Kyle Pitts just down bad for the last three seasons, and Arthur Smith as their offense coordinator, who, by the way, revived Ryan Tannehill's career once upon a time in Tennessee. So I don't want to knock Arthur Smith completely, but it is going to be a run-first, run-heavy style of offense just by virtue of what Smith has historically done, in my estimation, which is why, yes, Russell Wilson is athletic. He can move outside the pocket, but perhaps not to the level he once did, nor to the level that Justin Fields can right now. And I don't think Arthur Smith needs to have an athletic, mobile quarterback, but I just foresee a world in which, number one, where they have packages for Justin Fields early on in the season, and number two, where eventually that athleticism and the higher ceiling at this juncture of their careers just wins out.
Yeah, I think in training camp, we get reports out of Pittsburgh saying Justin Fields is pushing Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. Don't be surprised when he takes over. So I wouldn't be surprised within the first month. I just think Russell Wilson's best days are behind him. And that's a fairly easy statement to say considering what's happened the last couple seasons in Denver. But he just doesn't seem to be the same player with that same magic that he once had. And Justin Fields, I think he did get a little bit of a raw deal as far as Chicago's concerned and Caleb Williams and all that. So yeah, I think Justin Fields by like week five.
Yeah,
I don't even think it takes halfway through the season. All right, let's switch it to the Falcons. To me, this is another super interesting one because you do have Kirk Cousins coming off of the Achilles tear. You have the fact that he was not told that they were going to be drafting a quarterback.
Yeah.
Eighth overall in Michael Penix Jr. Mia, how do you see this one shaping up?
Before I give you my answer, did you guys see the report that the Falcons also put in a claim on Nathan Rourke?
Yes, I did.
Is there like...
Well, let me just tell you, the first sentence of the report was like former Patriot and Jaguar. And I was like, how did they get Mac Jones from? We just signed him.
Poor Mac Jones when it comes to the Brady roast.
Oh, yeah. I know.
That is not his fault. He is not that bad of a quarterback. But either way, please go back to the Falcons.
You know the SpongeBob meme or the episode where Patrick says like, what if we took all the... I forget if it's horses or what it is. John O'Leary, I'm like eye contact with you, and he's like, what if we took all of them and we brought them over here? Like, that is quite literally what the Atlanta Falcons are doing with quarterbacks. What if we took all of the quarterbacks and brought them over here?
Someone
will work out.
But Rourke ended up going to the Giants
because they had a higher waiver claim. It's fine. Like, I just had to get that bit out there because we just had a great submission on the text line of you know, like the woman and the man that they're laying in bed, and you know, she's thinking about other women. And it's I bet he still wants Nathan Rourke on the Jags. And sure enough, the guy says, why did we ever get rid of Nathan Rourke? Are the Patriots crazy? At least the Giants have brains.
Watch Nathan Rourke beat out Daniel Jones.
Yes. Wouldn't that be great?
Which we don't even have the Giants in our
In the thing, I was like, or maybe another team that you think may not. Okay. But the backups behind them suck, too. So it's like they didn't do anything to help. If Daniel Jones is done, like, out.
Well, they got Drew Locke, which I've heard multiple people. Like, Mike Garafolo.
I guess he had a couple games.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm not really bowled over by Drew Locke, but I know Mike Garafolo, who before he worked for the NFL Network, previously worked in covering the Giants. Like, he's been among those who have said, like, don't be surprised if Drew Locke beats out Daniel Jones. So
we shall see.
Back to the Falcons. It's Kirk Cousins. Yeah. It's going to be Kirk Cousins. I just feel bad for the guy because as much as I do not see a world in which the Falcons concede and put Michael Penix in the lineup, unless Kirk Cousins is hurt, the moment he throws his first interception, they're going to be clamoring for Penix. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate, but that's the bed that the Falcons have made, and now they have to lie in it.
It's crazy, Taylor, because I think Falcons fans were, for the most part, incredibly excited about Cousins because of the terrible quarterbacks that they had last year in Ritter and Heinicke.
Yeah, I think I've heard mixed reports because Kirk Cousins always has this kind of like negative hovering over him, even though he's been like pretty decent. His problem is he can't win when it's like the big moments. He has one playoff win and 12 years, and so that's where a lot of people hover, because I was hearing mixed, like a lot of Atlanta fans are like, this is great, you know, like he just a couple seasons ago, he was hurt obviously last year, so you didn't get a full, but he's thrown over 4,000 yards for like the 3-4 years that previous to that. And so a lot of people look at that, and then a lot are like, okay, well, are we going to find a quarterback that can take us over that like next hump? Because that's obviously they're looking at a division that's pretty winnable, and that's kind of what they're staring down. So, but I do think it will be Kirk. I think as long as Kirk's healthy, and that's where my concern is, because it makes me think a little bit them drafting a quarterback, the Falcons kind of surprising their owner and drafting a quarterback that high. And what seems like it wasn't really talked about that much, honestly, in that organization before the draft happened. Maybe there's some concern that he's not 100% or he won't be 100% by the time that happens. So that's my thing. But if Kirk is healthy, I think Kirk's starting start to finish.
They were quick to send that video out from the Falcon social team, weren't they, of Kirk on the field? Especially after, I guess he was on a podcast
like,
before the draft.
And he's
there was
here,
speculation. Right. There was speculation of, like, has he been cleared for everything yet? Because it is a gamble. He's, what, 35 years old?
Yeah.
34 years old?
I mean, in eight games last year, he threw 18 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. So it's like he's that guy that can get you those numbers. And Falcons have weapons on weapons.
Right.
So.
Well, that's why they went and got him. They are – I'm going to say this, and please don't get mad at me. They are the 2019 Jaguars who thought they were a quarterback away, but they really are.
Yeah.
Because they have those weapons. I do have questions about their defense, but if this is a scoring league, they have the weapons to score.
Yeah. Drake London, Kyle Pitts, Bijan Robinson. They are, in theory, offensively a quarterback away. I think they would have beaten Jaguars in London if they had had a more competent quarterback, but Ritter wasn't very good. And then the Nielsen-led defense last year in Atlanta was really good. By the way, you mentioned the division that the Falcons are in, and you think back to, again, a year ago, talking about quarterback battles.
Yeah.
Baker Mayfield versus Kyle Trask. Yeah. I think I was the only person on the Kyle Trask
train. Yeah, I was like, no way.
But clearly, they went with the better quarterback in Baker Mayfield. And so the Bucs, to me, are a team that is probably going to win the division again. But certainly the Falcons, with this conversation, the quarterback conversation is interesting. I really liked Penix coming out of college. I liked what I saw from his time at Washington. So I don't know that he necessarily gets a look early this season, but I would expect the second half of the season something to happen and Penix at least gets a start.
I mean, I was rooting for him to end up in Seattle, where we at least would know, okay, Geno Smith has one more year on his deal. He sits for a year. He becomes the heir apparent. Like, as much as there's also a school of thought that Michael Penix is 24 years old, Jordan Love was 24 years old this past season after sitting on the bench for 3 years. Mm-hmm. Michael Penix, if he sits at least for the next 2 years, he will be 27 when he is the undoubted starter, and that's if you cut out of Kirk Cousins' contract early. Mm-hmm. So that's where I understand the concerns about him sitting
and how much are they going to force it.
But I mean, I'm right there with you, Lauren. Like, I thought, you know what? Yes, there are questions about his knee injuries, but he put those to doubt on a college football field. I could see him putting them to doubt on an NFL field as well, because he does have a great arm. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, Seattle or Las Vegas, which, by the way, that's another story we will get to later in the program. I thought both of those would have been nice landing spots for him, but we enjoy the chaos on Helmets and Heels.
Yeah. What about Seattle? What about Minnesota? You mentioned Las Vegas. We've got more teams to discuss as far as the quarterback battle is concerned. You are listening to Helmets and Heels on 10 to Next on 2.5 FM.
Helmets and Heels is switched on by
First Coast Lighting and Fans.
Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor on 1010 XL.
Me, O'Brien, Taylor Dahl, RJ Saunders, I'm Lauren Brooks with you on this fine Wednesday afternoon until 2 o'clock and the next XL primetime takes over. We are going around the NFL and discussing quarterback battles. Mia, you mentioned Seattle. The Seahawks, Geno Smith versus Sam Howell. To me, that's a really good battle that people aren't talking about, because Sam Howell actually played pretty well for the Commanders last season.
Well, real quick, Lauren, before I give you my thoughts on that, we do appreciate all of the debate and conversation right now on the MyBookie Digital Studio chat line regarding our earlier topic as we build the Jaguars offensive line for 2024 and 2025. We'll circle back to that, get some of those responses in the 1 o'clock hour. So make sure you keep them coming there and on the text line Design by Lifetime Enclosures, as well as, yes, these quarterback battles, which also have several of you talking. No one has mentioned the Seahawks yet, though, Lauren, and I think it's because a lot of people believe with the guaranteed money heading Geno Smith's way, it's kind of a foregone conclusion that he will once again be the starter. But I also think that of all the head coaching changes in the National Football League, I feel like that's one of the more underrated ones. The Seattle Seahawks haven't had a coach not named Pete Carroll since 2009, 2010. I was in high school. I don't know about y'all. And so that's where I am genuinely intrigued. And I understand Mike McDonald is a defensive guy, much like Pete Carroll. I am genuinely intrigued to see if it's a new identity, if it's a blank canvas for Mike McDonald and company in Seattle. And if they do say, you know what, maybe we, you know, if we don't get the results we want from Geno, we're okay with Sam Howell for a year. And then we go out and draft our quarterback of the future next year.
Yeah, his stats weren't great, Taylor, as far as Sam Howell's with the Commanders. 21 touchdowns, 21 picks. But in watching it, I thought he was a guy that I predicted he would be terrible last season. And so I guess he was better than I thought. But certainly, like Mia said, Geno Smith is about to be awarded a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one's interesting to me. I have heard a lot out of Seattle that they love Sam Howell, like big time. That's why they went and got it, even though they had, you know, even though they paid Geno money. Shane Waldron, their offensive coordinator, obviously left and went to Chicago. So they are going through offensive changes anyways. And
Ryan Grubb.
New staff, from what I've heard, is very high on Sam Howell. And I think that with Geno, we saw Geno 2 seasons ago have this like breakout season where everyone was like, whoa, you know, like Pete Carroll and staff like brought Geno Smith back to life. And we saw it come back to earth a little bit in the second half last year. He still had pretty good numbers, but everything statistically kind of dropped once it got to the second half of last year. And when you have weapons like Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf and so much help around you when it comes even to your offensive line and defensively, it's kind of hard to make too many excuses. So I think this is to me one of the true battles in camp. Like this one to me, best man wins in camp.
And I feel like that's one, like I said, that has really flown under the radar because there's so many others with the big splashes and the draft and things like that.
Names you know better than Sam Howell and Geno Smith.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly. It's not the sexiest battle. I think that's a perfect way to say it. So heading up to Minnesota, the Vikings, to me, this is not a battle at all. J.J. McCarthy is going to be the starter.
Oh, wow, you do.
I do. I don't think Sam Darnold is good at all. No offense to him, but that's just what I think. And so J.J. McCarthy, while I don't know that during the season I ever thought he would be drafted as high as he was, 11th overall, I still think he's going to win that job going away.
Here's a philosophical question for you ladies. Remember last May, last June, even going into August, when the Carolina Panthers couldn't help but gush about, oh, Bryce looks ready. Bryce looks ready. Bryce is going to play. Even though we went out and signed Andy Dalton, Bryce looks ready. Was Bryce ready during the season?
No.
I can't.
He definitely didn't have a line either to help him whatsoever.
Or weapons.
He couldn't stay on,
right.
on his feet.
He had the 2021 Jaguars out there running routes for him.
The Vikings are very different situation.
Correct. And so J.J. McCarthy, the IQ has always been something that scouts have raved about, and the ability to manage games, a more athletic version of Kirk Cousins.
And he's way taller than Bryce.
Also that.
he can see a little.
But I just, and then also knowing that the Titans, yes, were kind of forced, their hand was forced. They had to play Will Levis because of injuries to Ryan Tannehill and because the lack of success they were having.
And their offensive line was also garbage.
Correct. How good's the Minnesota offensive line? I'm just kidding. I think they will start Sam Darnold. I also think that there is something to this new idea of he went through the Kyle Shanahan washing machine. He went through the Kyle Shanahan car wash out there for a year. Learned behind Brock Purdy, learned from Shanahan, and is potentially ready for a renaissance, if you may, akin to a Geno Smith, akin to a Baker Mayfield, which I understand neither of those two guys played for Kyle Shanahan, but I believe he is trying to build that quarterback factory in San Francisco, and I believe that that is revered around the National Football League.
Yeah, for me, I feel I lean towards J.J. McCarthy because I think that when we're looking at the Vikings team, I'm very big on giving the guy a year or two because I've seen firsthand what happens when you don't give the guy who needs a year or two, when you don't give him that opportunity, how much it screws things up going forward. And I do think that it would probably benefit JJ to sit for a season maybe and learn a little bit or even into the season. But I just don't think Sam Darnold's good, and I think the Vikings are at a point now where they're like, we're in a division that is getting very tough, very fast. We have some of the tougher defenses that we're going to have to face this season, and you're going to have a quarterback that you really count on and not someone who's going to make the mistakes that Sam Darnold makes. So I think that they, in their heads, they're like, okay, maybe it's not the best offensive line, but it's not. It's also in that middle of the pack with the Jags, honestly, from last season when it comes to sacks allowed and pressures and stuff like that. But obviously that was half the season with Kirk Cousins, who is not very mobile, does not move around a ton. Not saying J.J. McCarthy is like this full mobile quarterback, but he's younger and a little quicker.
He can definitely move.
He definitely way more than Kirk Cousins. And so I think that when you're looking at all these scenarios and you're looking at the weapons that the Vikings have, I think they'd be like, let's put this young guy in and see what we have out of him, because we have enough surrounding him on the offense that he would be able to kind of flourish. And I mentioned this months ago when I was saying Prisco was like, they love Drake May. And I was like, I'm hearing they love J.J. McCarthy. I heard from February that the Vikings were full on J.J. McCarthy, and he ended up falling to them in the perfect scenario. So I think that in this case, it's hard for me not to say that J.J. will end up starting.
From what I'm reading, the Vikings were close to a top three offensive line before an injury to right tackle Brian O'Neill.
That's what I remember them losing someone that made a big impact. Yeah. I couldn't remember who it was.
Well, they traded Ezra Cleveland, too, and that was after he got hurt.
Yeah, they returned four of their five starters for next year.
Because Darisaw is good. That's a name you talk about a lot when it comes to offensive line. So I remembered it not being absolutely terrible, but towards the end of the season, it kind of started falling apart. But that makes sense. They lost him.
Absolutely. All right. When we come back, we're going to talk some golf. That's right. We're talking golf. There is a really, really cool golf tournament right now at TPC Sawgrass. So we will talk to Kenny Sims, PGA of America's Senior Director of PGA Reach. Talk all about that golf tournament when we return on Helmets and Heels on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
You're listening to Helmets and Heels,
illuminated by
First Coast Lighting and Fans
on 1010 XL.
1 o'clock hour is here, as is our next guest. The PGA Works Collegiate Championship has returned to TPC Sawgrass. I believe 2021 was the last time that it was here in Jacksonville. Joining us now, a member of the PGA Works and PGA of America leadership team, it's Kenny Sims. Kenny, thanks so much for joining us on the All Pro Roofing Hotline.
Yes, thank you so much. I appreciate the invitation and love to talk to you a little bit about what we're doing here at TPC Sawgrass this week with the PGA Works Collegiate Championship. Thanks for the invite.
Absolutely. I was explaining it to the ladies of Helmets and Heels as well as producer extraordinaire RJ, but for our listening audience, give us a big picture of exactly what this tournament is and who some of the college programs are that have traveled to Ponte Vedra Beach this week.
The PGA Works Collegiate Championship is a 37-year-old event that began as a result of historically black colleges and university golf programs not being invited to compete in NCAA. And since then, the tournament has grown and evolved. This week, we will have 187 student athletes competing in five major categories. We have Division One men, and we have Division Two men. And then we have individual men competition where there's 35 competitors, and then we also have individual women competing, as well as a women's team division, which is a combination of Division One, Division Two, and NAIA. So we're really excited about the competition that's going on this week. I don't know if anyone's had an opportunity to follow it, but it's being broadcast live on Golf Channel from 3 to 6 today. And right now, we'll be teeing off here shortly on the stadium course, and Florida A&M holds a big lead over Alabama State in the men's Division One competition, and in the women's division, Texas A&M Corpus Christi has an 11-stroke lead over Howard University. And in our men's division of our Division Two men, the team that's in the lead right now is hang on 1 second. Apologies. On the wrong page for a second here. Let's see here.
What I do know, Kenny, is we do have a local product in, I believe it's the Division II, correct me if I'm wrong, the women's individual, which I know you're also very excited to tell us about. I know she had a little bit of a rough start this morning on the front nine, but T3 now is the one, the only Bowles product, Tori Mouton. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah, Mouton. Tori Mouton. Yeah, she plays for North Carolina A&T. Right now she's sitting in third place. She's three shots off the lead, and she's getting ready she's on the valley course. So there's plenty of time for her to get caught up because there's some really difficult holes. And, you know, right now Kendall Jackson has a slim lead over Howard University has a slim lead over Samantha Gibbs from Texas A&M Corpus Christi.
So
it looks like it's going to be a close finish.
Yeah, I love that. One of the things I love about it is how you guys get to brand yourselves as collegiate golf's most diverse and culturally significant championship. I think that's so cool. But of course, our listeners are very familiar with the stadium course that, like you said, they're playing on right now. How do these golfers approach 17 when they get to that island green?
We've seen everything from birdies to someone made 15.
Oh, so. That poor golfer.
Yeah, so we've seen a lot of joy, and we've also seen a lot of agony, as we normally do on that hole, right?
Exactly, yes.
It is really a compelling hole, and I would say by far that is probably the most famous par three in golf.
Yes. I was about to say, we see that in Players Week sometimes, that drastic difference of what people shoot on that island green. When you were talking about the being familiar with the course and just kind of what TPC Sawgrass does for the community here when we have Players Championship. I think this is the second time this event has been at TPC Sawgrass. So what does that mean for the tournament to be able to play at such a historical course like this, but also for the Jacksonville community?
Well, I think it's a huge impact for the Jacksonville community. We have over 187 golfers from all over the world that are competing. In fact, 29 countries are represented in this year's championship. So I lived in Florida for 40 years, so I know, you know, how important golf is to our community. So these student athletes are really enjoying it, and I think the Jacksonville community has embraced this. There's a huge amount of local volunteers helping out with the event, and the TPC staff here, Derek Sprague, Matt Boritz and Brian Riddle, have just been amazing hosts. Just the first class, high level hospitality. But you know, I really think that the impact that this event is going to have on the individuals competing is really the great story. Like, these kids are here playing, these young adults are here playing one of the most famous golf courses in the world. And it is in immaculate condition, and our championships department has done a great job of managing the event, and we're really, really excited. And we just can't wait for later today where we get to crown some champions in our five divisions.
Absolutely. It's been 3 days of golf. They also had over the weekend several youth and community events as part of the PGA Works Collegiate Championship, and they're wrapping up today at TPC Sawgrass as Kenny Sims, PGA of America, Senior Director of PGA Reach Impact, joining us on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline. Kenny, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, when I was speaking with one of your PR reps, who, of course, a fellow Friel Township High School great in the one, the only, Jared Minsky, I did have to ask him if J.R. Smith would be making an appearance at the event this week. He did say that there was a chance he'd be on the Golf Channel broadcast. Can you confirm?
Yes, he was on the broadcast yesterday. He talked about his experiences competing on North Carolina A&T's golf team. And he also kind of made some comparisons between, you know, the work that it takes to be a competitive golfer compared to when he was playing professional basketball. He brought in some really, really good insights. And he should be on property here in a few minutes. He's going to be taking a putting lesson.
All right.
With one of our Black PGA ambassadors, Clay Myers. And if all goes well, we'll be able to air a portion of that on the telecast today.
That is fantastic. I know we will be watching for that, Kenny. And I know producer RJ, who's a huge NBA fan and hosts our NBA show here on 1010XL, excited to hear about JR and, of course, his collegiate golf career in his post-NBA career. Kenny, thanks so much again for joining us. Can't wait to hear about the exciting finish.
Thank you, Lauren. Thank you, Mia. Thank you, Taylor. I really appreciate the invitation. This is fantastic. Good luck to all of you and all the work that you're doing and impacting the Jacksonville market. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you, Kenny. There he goes again. That's PGA of America's Senior Director of PGA Reach Impact, the tournament at TPC Sawgrass this week. The PGA Works Collegiate Championship. Again, they are wrapping up today. It's a three-day tournament, three rounds between the Sawgrass course and the Dyes Valley Golf Course at TPC Sawgrass.
Yeah, if you want more information or to find out the latest results, pgaworkscollegiate.org, pgaworkscollegiate.org. I think that's super cool, and I love that we got to shed a little light on this tournament.
Yeah, exactly, because, you know, like Kenny said, this started because HBCUs, Hispanic serving institutions, they weren't allowed to compete years ago at the NCAA championships. And so,
which is terrible.
It's awful. And so it's awesome that, number one, they are now invited to those as well. But number two, we can still celebrate the history of those programs and to have this unique event. And what's wild to me, and I was, you know, speaking with Kenny and Jared, Edward Waters, if any of our EDUB friends are listening, apparently they just blew the field away in last year's PGA Works, last year in Alabama. And I don't think they're in the field this year. At the come on, you're the home team. But happy to hear that FAMU is carrying the mantle and defending home turf, if you may, at TPC Sawgrass.
That's right. Yeah, so far so good for FAMU. All right, let's continue our quarterback conversation. We've been through several teams already, including the Steelers, the Falcons, the Seahawks, and the Vikings, as far as predicting who will start, who will finish the season. Let's get it now to Las Vegas. Our good friend Gardner Minshew has a quarterback battle with Aiden O'Connell. Taylor, to me, this is Gardner Minshew all the way.
Yeah, me too. I've heard other people kind of say that Aiden played well enough last year to where he could keep that spot, and it's more of a Gardner Minshew's job to take. But I almost feel opposite. I feel like they brought Gardner Minshew in for a reason. What he was able to do with the Colts down the stretch when he had to come in last season, they viewed that, and obviously he did it here in Jacksonville too. It's kind of those scenarios where you kind of need this guy to fill in for the time being until you find your future guy. Gardner seems like he's that person. So I think that we'll definitely see Gardner to start.
Yeah. I think Gardner will be the starter because this regime is not tied to Aiden O'Connell, despite the fact that he played admirably after the shuffle in the front office and at the head coaching position and the benching of Jimmy Garoppolo. I just think that Gardner has done enough to prove that he is a admirable bridge quarterback, if nothing else. And of course, we all know he believes he is a starter in the National Football League. I believe he will start opening day.
He landed in the perfect spot.
Yeah, and Pro Bowl quarterback.
Yes.
Gardner Minshew made
Pro Bowl. Yeah, he is a Pro Bowl quarterback.
And Gardner.
You know,
and he was probably the happiest person in the world that the Atlanta Falcons drafted Michael Penix Jr.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's the real winner on draft day, is he not?
Yeah. I mean, I think, like you said, it's a great place for him. We all know his strengths and we all know his weaknesses. He's very accurate. He knows where to go with the football. He just doesn't always have the best pocket awareness and pocket presence, and so he gets happy feet.
He gets a little crazy sometimes.
And, yeah, and he likes to play off schedule, and look, that can work at times, and then other times the NFL defenses can catch up with you. But
he gets to throw to Davante Adams and Brock Bowers, by the way.
And so, Michael Mayer.
And Michael Mayer, and Jacoby Meyer, so that'll be pretty fun.
Yeah, the Brock Bowers selection, I feel like, I mean,
he was probably like, heck yes, let's go. I mean, Gardner.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is as far as like quarterbacks who are watching the draft, you have to be, if you're Gardner, you have to be like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe that guy fell to us.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't think that's much of a
battle. Oh, and they added Jackson Powers Johnson too. So he's like, I get a little protection. We're good to go.
Before we get to our next quarterback, a little bit of breaking news on the local sports front, RJ.
That just happened. Brought to you by Florida Home AC, the official air conditioning partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
So there's an ongoing meeting at City Hall right now. No, I'm not referring to the stadium renovations. That will be next Tuesday. We'll get to that a little bit later in the 1 o'clock hour. But there's an ongoing meeting as the A-Sun Conference, which of course JU and UNF are both members of, is officially moving its headquarters to Jacksonville.
Oh.
So it will be the first Division I conference whose offices are based in Florida, which is crazy to think, considering with the ACC and SEC footprint that we do have here in the state of Florida. But for me, the real reason that I wanted to bring this up is that JU has said, and the city of Jacksonville has said, that they have submitted a bid to host the NCAA basketball tournament again in the next few years. They are awaiting the results. They haven't hosted since 2019.
Very interesting. I mean, Charlotte is the home of ACC and Birmingham, Alabama, the home of the SEC. But it is surprising that there haven't been, a conference headquartered here. So welcome down to the lovely area of Florida, which, by the way, this has nothing to do with that. But I saw a headline today because, like, only in Florida kind of thing.
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with Duval, thankfully. But y'all know I don't love to fly on airplanes, right? I saw a headline that said a man had snakes in his pants caught on a plane. I did not read the story because I don't need any further reason snakes to be afraid. But yes, he had snakes on an airplane, apparently. I don't know exactly when they caught him. Like I said, I didn't read it. Y'all can Google it if you want.
He watched snakes on a plane too
exactly. much. Yeah. But either way, I was like, oh, Florida. Oh. But yeah. Hey, son, welcome. We're normal here in Jacksonville, not like down in Miami. All right. Let's get it to Denver. Again, to me, this is not a battle whatsoever. I think Bo Nix is the absolute solidified starter when the season starts. And again, providing there's no injuries, I think he's the solidified starter when the season ends. And Zach Wilson is just hanging out in Denver.
I saw that Ben DiNucci was released. Not Ben DiNucci. Sorry. He was released by somebody else this morning. But it's Bo Nix, Zach Wilson, Jarrett Stidham. Mm-hmm. And there's a fourth quarterback, too. Was it DiNucci? There's definitely a fourth. They had four quarterbacks mm-hmm. when Bo Nix was drafted. Meanwhile, we don't know who's going to be throwing for the Jags at rookie minicamp on Friday.
Yeah.
Come on, Nathan Rourke. You really have to go to the Giants? I'm just kidding.
I guess Jarrett Stidham could be considered the backup. I feel like you don't get trade for Zach Wilson unless you want
compete with your rookie, which, again, I didn't foresee, as much as I saw plenty of pundits and analysts, prognostications were made that Bo Nix was Sean Payton's the apple of his eye. Mm-hmm. I just didn't see a world in which you're comfortable taking a quarterback who, while certainly an admirable college quarterback in the second of the last 2 years of his 5-year college career, mm-hmm. I don't see a world in which, if his ceiling is being a top 13, top 14, top 15 quarterback in the National Football League, selecting him 12th overall. Mm-hmm. But I also respect the fact that this is the world we live in, and you have to just keep throwing darts at the quarterback just to see what's going to happen.
Right. Yeah, I don't know, honestly. I kind of lean Zach Wilson starting and
really?
Bo Nix coming later. Yeah, only because I think that the Broncos weren't one of the guaranteed teams to get a quarterback. And so, that wasn't one that we were like majorly talking about them loving one of these quarterbacks. And like the Bo Nix to me was a little bit of a reach. And so in my head, they were kind of thinking Zach Wilson was going to be their guy and maybe they'd get one of these later quarterbacks and then kind of push him. I don't think Zach's going to be start to finish, but I think Zach will start and then we'll see Bo Nix getting worked in a little later.
By the way, they did release Ben DiNucci this morning. Oh. So
I wonder who had more of a free fall, and that's a whole different conversation, but like Jimmy Garoppolo, from where eventually he thought he was going to be the Patriots, heir to Tom Brady, and the free fall he's had, or Zach Wilson, who was drafted second overall behind Trevor Lawrence, and the free fall he's had. By the way, good news, TSA found the bag of snakes in the passenger's pants at the Miami airport, so it did not make it onto the plane.
In his pants?
His pants.
I'm not doing any further research. Yeah. I'm just going to move right along to New England.
New England, yes.
Drake May versus Jacoby Brissett.
I would say Drake May.
Yeah, I think Drake May, where he was drafted third overall. And Brissett, I think, is a good backup quarterback. He's one of those guys who's been around in the league as a backup for a long time and played pretty well in Indianapolis when he did start. But Drake May, people have been high on him. They thought he might be the number one overall pick a couple years ago.
There was people arguing that until up to before draft night of who Caleb, Jaden, and Drake, who was worth 1, 2, 3. Caleb kind of started sliding away towards the end, but that conversation, Drake was pretty late into the conversation of being the number two quarterback on a lot of people's boards. I do think I don't think Bo Nix is quite ready for that. Bo Nix played so chaotic and crazy, and yes, it kind of tamed and he started finding some structure. I think he still has work to do. To me, I think Drake May could go out and perform well pretty quickly.
I just go to the reporting that I've heard out of New England, which says that the plan as of now, and whether you agree with it or not, the plan as of now is that Ben McAdoo-doo-doo-doo-doo, former Jaguars quarterbacks coach and former Giants offense coordinator and one-time head coach.
I like McAdoodle-doo.
McAdoo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. Ben McAdoo is going to work as the quarterbacks coach in New England with Drake May. Alex Van Pelt, the offense coordinator, is going to work with Jacoby Brissett. And so if that is true, because that's, again, just what I've read, if that is true, that says to me that Van Pelt is focused on the 2024 season and getting Brissett ready to start right away. And then May is being brought along. They are putting him in that incubator. Does he play next season? I think there will be a moment because New England's roster isn't that strong that the pressure may cave in and they may say we need a boost of energy. We need a shot in the vein. We need Drake May to ignite this offense. But I believe, and again, especially hearing how adamant the Kraft family was that they were going to come away with a first-round true pedigree quarterback in this draft, that they would rush him to start right away and not follow the model of, sorry, Taylor, the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah. So you believe Jacoby Brissett starts and finishes the season?
Yes.
Or Drake May comes in at the end? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. That's interesting. I just don't think sitting Drake May behind Jacoby Brissett does anything for Drake May. So that's where my concern would be. It was like when they'd sat Justin Fields behind Andy Dalton. That does nothing. That did nothing. It almost hindered him. It made it worse because they're different quarterbacks. They had to make the offense different for the two quarterbacks. And he's played, like, other than in Cleveland, which, by the way, he started in 11 games and threw just 12 touchdowns and 6 picks in those 11 games. It's been 0 starts, 5 starts, 0 starts around that. So I just don't feel like, I mean, I guess maybe they want to do that to see if they can get enough out of Jacoby Brissett, but it would be crazy for New England to do that, I feel like.
Yeah, that conversation is, and that debate will always rage on. What is the correct way to groom a quarterback? Is it to have them start and take their lumps and learn from their mistakes, but have all that experience under their belt early? Or is it to sit them for a few seasons, i.e. Aaron Rodgers, i.e. Jordan Love, and that model? But not very many teams want to replicate that model, so it must be that very few believe that that's the way to go.
Or have the quarterback that they feel like can help. Like Jordan Love sitting behind Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes sitting behind Alex Smith is different than Drake May sitting behind Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah, I totally agree. And we saw that, I feel like, here too with Chad Henne v. Blake Bortles.
Yes,
like
exactly.
Chad Henne wasn't the great quarterback that you could just groom Bortles. And, of course, that led to Bortles starting way earlier than what maybe the Jaguars had wanted back then. We will finish our quarterback battle conversation with Derek Carr versus Spencer Rattler, my absolute favorite. That's right. And Jake Haener is also in New Orleans. But when it comes to the Saints, I think most people know that I have nothing against Derek Carr. I just predicted he would not be a good quarterback for Las Vegas. And since then, he is had sometimes decent stats, but he's not the quarterback that any team really wants to rely on. Saints fans didn't love him coming to New Orleans, and last season they were certainly fed up with him throughout the season. So can Spencer Rattler push Derek Carr? I believe he can.
I don't. I like Spencer Rattler. I think he has a fantastic arm. I think he has a lot of work to get done, and I don't hate Derek Carr as much as you
I
do
hate
either.
Him. I think he's bad.
I don't think he's that bad. I think he's like a feasible quarterback. I don't think he's fantastic. He'll win you enough. He can do enough to get you by. I think the problem with Derek Carr, I think more so in his career, is the fact that the locker room always seems to hate him for whatever he does and whatever he says.
And that is not my fault.
Yeah. To me, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe if Spencer Rattler plays, it'll be late in the season when, like, this isn't working. The Saints project and Derek Carr and the locker room blows up and they're losing anyways and the division's lost and they're like, well, we'll let Spencer Rattler get some playing time.
And he's probably not the long-term solution.
Yeah.
By the way, the Jake Haener point is hilarious because how did the Saints come to acquire Jake Haener, ladies? Oh, that's right. They traded a 2024 fourth-round pick in 2023 with the Jaguars so that they could select Jake Haener, who then promptly was suspended for, I believe it was PEDs.
Yeah.
That one's a lot of fun. But no, I having traveled to New Orleans with the Jags and many Jaguar fans who were there would echo these sentiments if you spoke with any of the Saints fans in your section. They are disenchanted with him. They recognize the monetary commitment to him and that they can't get out from underneath it. But I foresee a world in which the anger, the frustration, especially if there is no cohesion and no results, despite the fact that you have Chris Olave, you have Alvin Kamara, you have explosive playmakers, and it still doesn't come to fruition. I expect Spencer Rattler to play at some point next season. And there are some teams that had third, fourth round grades on him from the reporting that I've read.
Right.
I don't know how the Jaguars felt about him, aside from the fact that they did have him in for a visit. And so people believed he was that next quarterback after Bo Nix, Michael Penix Jr., and J.J. McCarthy. And so I don't want to discount him completely, but it's also just not the best situation, I think, for him to walk into because there is a monetary commitment to Derek Carr, despite the fact that the fan base hates him.
Yeah, his contract, Carr's, 4 years, up to 150 million. His base salary this upcoming season, $30 million for the 2024 season. So that's why, I mean, I guess you could say he's a poor man's Kirk Cousins. Like, the stats aren't atrocious, and people, though, realize he's not going to be the clutch quarterback that you want. I just don't think, I would rather have Cousins all day, obviously, than Derek Carr.
Yeah. Yes, because, yeah, statistics say that, but I do think Taylor brought up a really good point when we were discussing the Minnesota Vikings before Kirk Cousins' injury. That offensive line is supremely underrated.
Mm-hmm.
The Saints' offensive line, as I alluded to in our offensive line conversation, which we will circle back to, don't worry, my Bookie Digital Studio chat line, that offensive line in New Orleans has a lot of questions,
mm-hmm.
despite the fact that, yes, I know they've hit on several first-round talent over the last – or picks over the last few years. I mean, if you lose Ryan Ramczyk, if he is forced to medically retire, you have a gaping hole yep. at one of your tackle positions, and you have questions, in my opinion, throughout.
All right. Is the stadium deal done? I'm not exactly sure. So we'll dive into that next right here on Helmets and Heels on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Helmets and Heels is brightened by
First Coast Lighting and Fans
on 1010 XL.
When I was 6 years old, Mia O'Brien, Taylor Dahl, RJ Saunders, I am Lauren Brooks. We are hanging out with you on this fine Wednesday. And I know we are all in alignment that we believe the Jaguar Stadium needs to be renovated, and we're excited for that project to be started and completed so the new stadium can be, or at least renovated stadium can be, state of the art. So here are the two things that I read on Twitter today. Jacksonville City Council President, and this came from Nate Monroe of the Times Union, just said Mayor Donna Deegan and the Jaguars have reached a deal on renovating Everbank Stadium. They will present it to the council on Tuesday. Then Gene Frenette, just minutes later, tweeted out, what Jacksonville President Ron Salem, City Council President Ron Salem said this morning about the stadium deal being done with the Jaguars was premature, inaccurate. Saying a deal is done implies no more work is needed. Both sides tell him that is false. Great progress has been made and it looks good, but no deal is done. So in the battle of
media. Thank you to Nate. Yes, we have a lot of social media battles these days. And yes, we're leaning into the bit. Nate then followed it up and said, since there is obviously a physical agreement, and since we and others have asked for that document, we should receive it before Tuesday. There is no, but we want it present on X date exemption in the public records law, which says to me that if you can access it through a public records request, mm-hmm. yes, to the columnist's point, it hasn't actually been signed yet. But the proposal, the physical piece of paper exists.
Yes.
That is a huge step in the right direction. Yes. A physical piece of paper that will be presented on Tuesday.
Yes. And obviously what we know is Donna Deegan and the Jaguars, they have this agreement. Now on Tuesday, it's taken to the council and they want to obviously get it approved as fast as possible, because from there, then you take it to the NFL and the NFL does their whole approval and their process of having the renovations or new stadium, whatever it is. And so there are more steps to this, but this is the massive first step that we've been waiting to have for a long time.
And it's important to just note, Lauren, yeah. and I bring this up because a lot of our staff here at 1010XL had questions. They asked, you know, is this, we're going to talk about it Tuesday, it's going to be approved Tuesday? I don't know, because in the branches of government, as I put my AP U.S. government hat on, I know plenty of you listening out there also have to take the AP U.S. government test. This is the executive branch and the entity at hand, which is the Jaguars, coming to an agreement. There was a negotiator, an outside third-party negotiator who was hired, who has negotiated similar stadium deals, who went back and forth between the two sides over the last few months. They have come to a compromise. That is what's being presented. Now it's a question of the city council, the quote-unquote legislative branch, that also needs to sign off on it, just like you need a two-thirds majority in the House to get something approved.
Mm-hmm.
Now you look towards the council. It can't just be the president signs off and it
everything
happens.
Yeah.
Correct. And so it's the same way with city politics. It cannot just be the mayor signs off, the mayor's in agreement, and it's good to go. You need council support as well.
Yeah, and that does not mean that on Tuesday at the meeting it is approved. That's why I know I read a lot that the Jaguars are hoping by early summer, you know, when we're hitting mid-July, that no later than that it does get approved. But obviously, the quicker, the better.
Yeah, and from what I've been told as far as the NFL owners are concerned is they are not going to approve a deal in which the owner, Shad Khan, pays more than 40%. That they would like to see a minimum of the city paying 60% and Shad paying 40%.
40.
And so some people I know are hopeful that it's going to be 50-50. and maybe what I've been told is incorrect, but that's what I've heard, is that it's going to be 60-40 is what the NFL, that's the minimum that the NFL owners would approve, because again, the NFL owners don't want to set a precedent to where other teams can just all of a sudden have the owner pay a lot more, because, oh, by the way, the owners are very savvy businessmen, and so therefore they don't want it all coming out of their pockets.
And look, I know there are still, even after we've talked about it for over a year now, since the Jaguars caravans that were going on last summer, the summits that Mark Lamping and company were hosting, we've gone over it at nauseam, that yes, there have been owners, i.e., Jerry Jones, Stan Kroenke, that have just said, well, I'm financing it myself and I'm going to move it there. Those owners own teams in Dallas, Los Angeles, major metropolitan areas. I'm not saying that Jacksonville is not a major metropolitan area, but it is not at the size or scale of LA.
Yeah, we're still small, considered small market.
And so that is where the NFL owners need to see that there is support from the grassroots, mm-hmm. from the people within that community, so that they're not approving this and no one's going to go to the stadium and it's going to fail. And in turn, that hurts their bottom line ultimately in the end as mm-hmm. a collective.
Yeah. All I know is the mass amount of people who care about this city should care about the stadium getting renovated, because it is one of the oldest. Mm-hmm. The Jaguar Stadium and the Buffalo Bills Stadium were the oldest too. The Bills already have a plan to renovate theirs. The Titans, which isn't that old, but I've heard is one of the worst stadiums. Mia, I know you've been there.
That's not good.
Yeah, that they already have a plan for that to move forward. But the way that New York works and the way that Tennessee works is they're allowed to have state funding.
Correct.
Florida does not give state funding for a project like this. So when people start to complain again about, well, why don't we get things that the other teams don't get? Well, it's because of the way the state laws
state
work.
Is different.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right. Oh, and by the way, too, at least in the case of Nashville, from what I have read, they also get county funding. Duval County, city of Jacksonville, Spider-Man meme, same thing. Mm-hmm. And so that's where, again, some of these other organizations and cities, it's a different conversation surrounding who will foot the bill. Mm-hmm. I think what's also going to be interesting, once this plan becomes public record, can be accessed, whether that's through the Times Union or whoever requests it before Tuesday's meeting on Tuesday night for the council, I think what's going to be interesting to see, Taylor, is if the Shipyards area is being included. Mm-hmm. There were conversations about maybe that area ShotKon will foot the bill for. The stadium is the only thing that the taxpayers mm-hmm. are involved in paying for in terms of renovation.
Because if you separate it from the stadium funds, then he owns it. Yes.
So then it's on him.
Yes.
And he very well may turn that around, sell it to other people. I also know on the other side of the negotiating table, and this was included in today's Times Union and News for Jack's stories, that Mayor Deegan has been very adamant about somehow, some way, including the out east neighborhood and revitalizing it as part of these efforts, which the Jaguars, by the way, have been very vocal. Mm-hmm, Trevor definitely went out there, met with some of the families that live out there two years ago.
Urban Meyer was out there.
Urban Meyer was also out there with the grill. Once upon a time, never forget. And so there's a commitment.
He built the Miller Electric Center alongside Arden Key.
Yes. And then the grill. Never forget the grill. But no, so there is a commitment from the Jags on that side too. So that's the other fine tuning that I'm very curious to see what compromise they came to. But to your initial question, Lauren, look, it's not agreed upon. Again, what do we lead the show by saying? Two things can be true at once. Like, it's beauty is in the truth is beauty in the eyes of its beholder. Mm-hmm. You could have the deal between the city, the executive branch of the city, and the Jaguars agreed upon, but it's not final yet. Okay. Yeah. So, wow, this whole show really came full circle. This is a very nice little tidy program, is it not?
It is indeed. And speaking of that, we have one segment to go.
Hey, let's do it. And let's go full circle before we get to our local sports update on the other side, because there's some opinions that I think we need to get to and kind of put a bow on that offensive line discussion we led the program with.
Sounds good. We'll do all of that in our next segment here on Helmets and Heels on 1010XL on 82.5 FM.
This hour of Helmets and Heels is brought to you by First Coast Honda Dealers.
This is Helmets and Heels.
Kept classy by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor.
On 1010XL.
All right, Mia, what does the My Bookie Digital Studio YouTube chat line have to say about the offensive line? And in case you missed that part of the conversation, that's how we kicked off the show. So go back and listen on demand.
Yeah, a lot of debate. A lot of debate. And, of course, if you go back to 1010XL's YouTube channel and you watch the show archived, or even if you're watching it live, you can scroll back and see the live chat on the My Bookie Digital Studio going. The two points that I want to dive into that I think lend themselves to our conversation, again, as we look to the Jaguars' offensive line, building it for 2024, but also for 2025. The first of which, and I know Taylor spoke with one of our Heligans on the text line, Design by Lifetime Enclosures, about this, by moving Anton Harrison to left tackle, if you move Walker Little to right tackle, aren't you just doing the same herky-jerky, learn this position now, learn that position later with Anton, song and dance, that you also did with Walker Little in the third year of his career?
I mean, in theory, but I think because he's played both positions, I don't think it's a true learning curve that he'd have to, like, Walker Little was only a left tackle at Stanford and then had those injuries. Anton has played both of those positions, so that's why it wouldn't bother me to do that. But certainly if you want continuity moving forward for years to come, well, then get rid of Cam, move Anton to left tackle, and put whoever you want at right. I mean, or I guess you could keep Cam, move Cam to right, although I think it has been well documented that Cam Robinson does not want to play right tackle.
Yeah. Or left guard, for that matter.
Right, or left guard, and I understand that because he believes he's a left tackle, and that's obviously what many around the league believe as well. So that's why I don't have any issue if they want to move Anton to left tackle, and I think that, again, that's what I believe their plan was when they drafted him. Play him one season at right tackle and then move him to left, but they realize with all the injuries that can happen to the offensive line, they want to keep four tackles. At least that's what I'm looking at as far as what they have on the roster and then what they drafted in Javon Foster. That's what they're telling me as of now.
And your four tackles, just to clarify for those who missed in the 12 o'clock hour, are Cam Robinson, Walker Little, Javon Foster, and then you're counting Blake Hantz as that fourth tackle?
Cam Robinson, Anton Harrison, Walker Little,
sorry,
and Javon Foster.
Anton. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, Blake Hantz, I mean, God love him, he's there when needed, but yeah. No, I don't put him in that top four. So yeah, the offensive line conversation I think is fascinating because none of us know at this moment, mm-hmm. is Cam Robinson playing on the Jaguars this upcoming season? I believe he is, but does something crazy happen between now and then?
And I also think that, again, if you missed it, go back, watch on demand, because I think it's a great exercise. We have an idea of what the 2024 Jaguars offensive line will look like because, at least to our face, the organization has been very forthright with mm-hmm. the lineup we have week 17 is who we wanted along our offensive line. Now, whether that includes Cam Robinson in a contract year or not remains to be seen.
Yeah.
But it's when you look ahead, Taylor, to 2025 that's where this conversation really gets juicy for sports radio, if nothing else. And so I do want to also address on the MyBookie Digital Studio chat line, this was from Tuck the Fightins. Love that name. Moving Luke Fortner to a backup role this season, are you keeping him waiting in the wings as your backup center? Are you developing him to eventually play guard where he did play at times at Kentucky?
I think you're developing him to stay center. I think that's why you drafted him there.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah, and I guess that would be the mindset. I don't think that is their choice going forward, but if that was the decision they make, then I think it makes the most sense to keep him at center.
Because your guard, I mean, you're talking about guys that have to be maulers, mm-hmm. and if you're not a mauler at center, you're probably not going to be a mauler at guard, is how I look at it. Let's get it to some college baseball. Last night, I don't know if y'all were following along, but JU battled FSU, who is ranked 8th in the country. JU had the lead the entire game until the bottom of the 11th when FSU walked it off with a single.
Heartbreak.
Yeah, absolutely heartbreaking. Walked it off 7-6. FSU won in Tallahassee and FSU improved to 36-10. The Seminoles swept the Dolphins for the first time since 2018. I think that's important to note how well JU plays against not just Florida State, but Florida as well. And then now that means FSU went 14-0 against in-state opponents this season. So again, the turnaround that Leek Jarrett's been able to do from season one to season two there in Tallahassee is incredible. FSU is at Pitt this weekend, beginning Friday at 6 p.m. Florida did win a midweek game. Yay. USF went down 4-1 in Gainesville. Kevin O'Sullivan, this to me is fascinating as far as the pitching conversation. Kevin O'Sullivan looked at his pitching rotation and said, this is not going to work for us. Mm-hmm. And obviously right now, Florida is on a razor's thin edge as far as making the postseason. So that game was really important last night. He takes the Friday night starter in Brandon Neely. he says, I know this is what you've worked for, but I need you as my closer.
Mm-hmm.
So now second save of the season, he got it last night. He was able to pitch a scoreless ninth. So now you're starting three as far as Friday, Saturday, Sunday will be Pierce Coppola, who has battled through a ton of injuries, and it's good to see him finally be able to pitch for Florida. You got Liam Peterson, the freshman, who a lot of expectations were on him, hasn't been as good as people expected all season. And then you've got Jack Caglione. And of course, since I mentioned Cags, he had his 27th home run of the season last night.
What did we set the over-under at for him for the home runs this year? Did we set put a number on it?
We said over because I think he hit 33 last year. Was that what his final?
That's what I know.
Because he was at... How many? He just hit what?
He just hit his 27th. I know Condon Georgia, who I always call Condren, because the Florida baseball park is the Condren family ballpark. And then you've got, of course, Alex Condon, the basketball player. So now I just remember that when I think of Georgia's guy. He's hit 33. So I want to say Cags hit 33 last season. So our over-under might have been right around.
Around that.
I
heard Dan Hicken talking about the game this morning, and he was saying that he believes the reason they were moving that pitching to the midday is because they knew they had to win that one because they faced number one in the SEC in Kentucky this weekend.
Yeah, so Kentucky's ranked third in the nation. Florida obviously just faced Tennessee, who's number one in the nation is Tennessee, but Kentucky is first in the SEC. So still a major gauntlet for Florida all season long. So your last chance, Florida fans, to see Cags in person in Gainesville is this weekend. Like you said, as Florida plays host to Kentucky, that series begins Friday, 6:30. I mentioned JU. JU is at home against Georgia Southern today. First pitch, 6:00. I mentioned the loss, super close loss to FSU last night. And then UNF lost at UCF 7-4 last night. UNF is at North Alabama beginning tomorrow at 7 p.m. And our Jumbo Shrimp also lost last night 8-6, but they are currently playing right now. And the score is 1-1 in the bottom of the third.
And, hey, since you brought it up,
against
Lauren, one of the exciting things we have coming at 1010XL, info to come.
Yes.
There is going to be a 1010XL Day at the Jumbo Shrimp. Round of applause, RJ, coming
Love
in
it.
June. Helmets and Heels will also be live from that day game. And
Love
there may
that.
Or may not be an exciting contest that accompanies it. Keep it on the 1010XL social channels because you'll hear more about how maybe you could even, I don't know, be on the field for that game. We will have that info and that contest coming up on 1010XL Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, wherever you follow us.
And good news, Jumbo Shrimp must have just hit, maybe not a three-run bomb, but they scored three runs in the top of the fourth. So it's now 4-1 Jumbo Shrimp over Omaha. So way to go for them. We also, like I said, we talked about the offensive line a lot today. And so as far as the other conversation that we had, quarterbacks and the quarterback battles. So if you want to weigh in on that, certainly on the social channels, you can do that as well. And we'll take your comments potentially tomorrow. But that's going to do it for us today. Don't go anywhere. XL Primetime is coming up next. For Taylor Dahl, for Mia O'Brien, for RJ Saunders, I'm Lauren Brooks. These heels are made for talking. We'll talk to you tomorrow. I'm gonna walk all over you.